we play a real colorful album, first reaction with us is, well, let's find out how it is to play an album in black and white.
This whole tour series, all these huge performances with the band, with drums and bass, and so we were, it also still worked in our minds. And then I think we decided, well, just put that aside. This whole mountain of instruments, we just leave it and we just go to something totally different.
We already made a collection of ideas in the Ting way, and I brought the cassette with me when we were playing on the festival in Switzerland. And then after that, I went on holiday in France and I played that cassette the whole holiday. And I was really charmed by the sound of it. I still have it. It's called Piano and Percussion. And I thought, what a nice tape. That's in my mind the blueprint of what later became the album.
Dial Nits, a podcast about the Dutch band Nits. A celebration of five decades of sophisticated music from the Netherlands. Your host, Erik Vakker. Giant Normal Dwarf, the album from 1990, was a look into a colorful kaleidoscope. In 1992, the Nits returned to more basic materials, stone, wood, water. Water takes its shape from its surroundings, glass, barley, riverbed. Water mirrors the clouds above, the swaying trees. Water is the sound of movement. The river rubs the pebbles on the riverbed until they start whispering. Water rushes over boulders, the crash of waves on the beach, the tinkling of raindrops on the roof, cymbals, kettle drums, brushes, sticks, double bass, and pianos. When water freezes, it becomes ice. When an icicle falls, it goes ting.
It started with a radio show we had, a live radio show. We played a few songs, but we didn't have the equipment. We didn't have drums. There was no keyboards. There was only a grand piano, and I had no guitar. And we did maybe two or three songs in Leidsekade live.
I had to rethink the whole situation.
Yeah, and then we found out, because we played this two or maybe three songs, that it was so nice, because the minimum of instruments, the minimum of sound, and only me singing on it. Why aren't we going to do a whole thing like this? For me, that was the start. We really discussed it, because we heard the recording. It's probably still there somewhere in the archives. I think that was the start of the first idea of doing it in a different way, totally opposite to the colorful and many, many possibilities of Giant Normal Dwarf. The infinite tube black. This is the place.
Where they build a machine, they wipe out the drawings and lock up the dream, the hope. This is the house we've been in before, the laboratory, the long corridor, the smoke. Me and my sister drive home with the blues, lifted the burglars, polish the shoes.
I think the very first session of Ting, we were still trying to use the traditional equipment. The very first, only one day or maybe only one afternoon. And then we felt or really drew the conclusion, this is not going to work. This is not
very well possible.
Yeah. And then we sort of really thought, well, let's take the axe and get rid of it all. And then I thought, oh, of course, I know where I can find timpani. Yeah. Oh, but maybe we could rent pianos, you know, like this.
Yeah.
And
In the rainbow room, the lights are going down. I sit beside her. In a corner table town, where the bottle's falling down behind her. I'm here in time. I'm here in time. I'm here in time. I'm here in time. Fortune telling man, you always look into my eyes. You say the same thing. In a corner table town, the eyes. It starts raining. I'm here in time. I'm here in time.
I remember the moment that we decided. I know we said, no guitar, no synthesizers.
Just
samples of pianos, if not a real piano. Two pianos.
Yeah.
And Rob, no drums, but classical percussion.
Yeah.
So that was quite...
that was quite a change.
Why I'm here beside you, why I feel like I've known you for a long time.
Not having your right foot on a bass drum, not having your right hand on a hi-hat, it makes a lot of difference. But it was an enriching. Is that the right word?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you did, of course, doing this, you discover so many nice things.
I felt lucky because piano is my favorite instrument. I was compelled. to play my favorite instrument. Yeah, curious. Like, what the hell can we do with it? I mean, 1, 2, 3 songs, okay, but the whole album.
Yeah. It's a diet. Eh? Not eat too much, not put too many things on the table.
And to stay with your promise.
Our concept was strict. But beautiful, and it works.
I'm here in time, in table town.
What about the way that you write songs? Did that change anything for the songs?
For me, it changed a lot because, of course, I was playing piano. I seldom did before, but singing was different for me because there was an enormous space. It was a totally different sound world, and that gave me also a kind of freedom for writing and for singing.
Bye.
It was very interesting because suddenly you can hear how all these sounds had the time to die out. So the cymbals, the piano, the timpani we used, you can always hear doom and it just goes away.
It's like a natural fade out or something.
Yeah, so playing songs like that, you are you get the opportunity to really enjoy the sound of the instrument you're playing because there's always these spaces. In some moments, I just waited until the sound died away before I did another one. And it matched perfectly what Robert Jan and Henk did on the piano. And I think all of us realized it without mentioning it probably.
Many songs, they stop,
emptiness.
They fade. And then it's empty,
yeah.
And then you start again,
yeah.
And that's really a new groove.
Yeah,
it's not a groove at all, of course, but it's new steps.
Yeah,
longer
steps,
things.
Longer
waiting,
steps.
Waiting.
Yeah.
It's not
patience.
The thing came from the waiting. It's I am waiting. Ding.
I think it's the first time that the minimal music came to us.
Yeah.
We should not forget
the Swiss
contribution the Stones.
Yep.
The Swiss contribution? Rob Klutz was brought into contact with Sounding Stones by the percussionist Fritz Hauser from Basel. These Sounding Stones are sculptures by the artist Arthur Schneider, and these sculptures can be used as musical instruments. Fritz Hauser invited Rob to play a couple of concerts in Switzerland.
Remember, we did the Sounding Stones project in Basel for quite a series of performances. And he was fascinated by those stones. The Sounding Stones was a new element to him, as it was for me also. And we tried to kind of find the music to develop something that goes beyond. You couldn't, with Sounding Stones, you cannot play drums, you cannot create all kinds of that usual kind of stuff, but it's a sound world and in which you have to find some kind of connection to a musical thought. It's very, very different. It's very kind of irritating first. It's like playing with church bells. It's just like not possible. And then eventually you find your way around and you start developing playing techniques, and of course you also started to develop a dialogue over several sounding stones. Very fascinating.
Rob wanted to include these strange sounds in the new record by his band, an album that they were working on at that time.
When this idea came up that we could actually be part of this production, I was fascinated and very interested, and I traveled with Arthur Schneider. He's the guy who actually makes these stones, to Holland. We put the stones that fit in his car into his car, and we drove 800 kilometers to Holland and installed the stones and started to play around with these instruments with the nits.
When they got to the Werf, a TV team was waiting. The artist, Arthur Schneider, explains the musicians' ways of coaxing musical sounds from the sculptures, which he calls soundscapes that look like geographical maps.
Und hier diese Reibgeschichten.
He says one can play the stones with mallets, hammering them, or one can rub them together. And then Otto Schneider tells the musicians to let loose rhythmically.
Sich perkussiv ausleben.
Sound of the stones, which is only possible when you cut out the piece and then you treat it accordingly, and then it's hanging or it's supported by whatever rubber support, and then it starts to sound, then the sound is really unexpected. I always said it's like a singing fish. It's just like something you would not expect from a stone to sound like this, and then when you hear it, you're pretty perplexed. They are not metal, they are not whatever. If you just hear him alone, you think, sounds like bells. But then if you hear a bell at the same time, you realize, no, the overtone structure is completely different. And they also go very much to the body. So it actually, when you play on sounding stones for a while, you will miss them. It's like you get kind of homesick for the sound. You want to hear that sound again. I remember very well the first time I played with the stones. I worked intensely for 2 weeks, and then I stopped. I had to leave again. And then I missed the sound just coming into my body. It's a kind of vibration which is quite different to everything else I know.
About as far from in the Dutch mountains as one could imagine 5 years later.
It's a very radical decision, but also very normal for us on that moment.
In the Dutch mountains was also radical. Straight on two track.
But we're talking about pop music, and pop music has an audience. And you have that hit album, and you have another hit album with the live album. And you do something radically different. What were you trying to do? I remember one thing that you said once. It was the Ministry of Silly Walks, as done by the Nits.
Oh, yes, I did. I've forgotten that. That's a good one. Yeah, that we kept. But yeah, that's a good name for the whole thing, the Ministry of Silly Walks. If you look for a name for... But I don't know if you are constantly aware of things like this, like success or not success. For me, there was no time to think about it. There was no time in my life. I thought about it when people asked me questions about it. But while working, while recording, while playing, while doing concerts, I never wondered about things like this. Like being a commercial object or not.
I can remember very well that also when we finished Dutch Mountains,
a few people around us, close to us, were very much in doubt of this kind of music would in a way of could be successful. Anyway, it was amazed.
With each album.
Yeah, that's with each album. Yeah, that's true, of course. But oh, but because Dutch Mountains turned out to be such a huge success.
And now we talk about this, also the song Dutch Mountains.
So, of course, you
never know, and nobody ever knows.
It goes only to show that you should just follow your own path and do what you think is necessary at that particular moment for the band or for yourself,
and the recordings.
Be playful.
Recordings of Ting, the moment that we did it, we really thought, and we were right, that was the most beautiful thing that we could create.
Yeah.
It was the most adventurous and empty and it reflects, it shows what we were thinking and what we liked. So it's such a normal process for the people who are doing it.
It was a sort of world we designed, and was the task to find every corner of that world, you know, to see how vast it was.
Ting was released in October 1992. The same year, another project by the Nits sees the light of day. Juvi, A Rhapsody in Time, a symphonic piece, which was written mostly by Robert Jan Stips.
Juvi, it was a request from the Veronica Broadcasting Company, because the Veronica dealt especially with pop music and didn't do much about classical music. But since they were a Dutch broadcasting company, they got this money for the government also to spend on classical things. They came to us with this request for writing 1 hour of symphonic music for a big symphonic orchestra and a band.
Not a first in the history of music, the combination of rock band and orchestra, Deep Purple, or Procol Harum as examples, to mention two that were recorded for posterity. The Nits found their own concept for such an enterprise.
And many people would then think of something like what Deep Purple did with an orchestra, like a band with a big orchestra behind it. But we decided to get into the orchestra and dissolve as a band. Rob went playing with the percussion players. I sat behind the grand piano, and Hank took a spot where he would sing a few songs. I was the only one who could write music and had a little sort of education at the conservatory, but not to write for orchestra. So I learned it while doing, and it took me 7 months to write the hour of music.
Light bulb in the rising.
About Juvi, it
It's the name of a virtual boy who lives in a big house, and in every room of the house there's a special atmosphere. That's why I divided the part not in parts only, but also in rooms. Like there was one room that was inspired by Bach, and there was a room inspired by George Gershwin, one by Rachmaninoff, one by Sofia Gubaidulina, one by the French music of Eric Satie, Claude Debussy and Maurice Ravel. One was inspired by Philip Glass, one more like Bartok and Stravinsky, but all like not very literally, but just as I felt it while writing. I was thinking of those composers while writing the music for that room. Starts out with a theme that is circling around the note A. In the first part, it's all about finding the A. First, it's like circled around without playing the A. It's quite a busy theme, and it's looking for the A because UV, and it's also called like A Rhapsody in Time. And yeah, the Rhapsody in Time, of course, about all the composers in different times, but the title, the subtitle, also starts with A Rhapsody. So at a certain moment, it's the whole orchestra playing just the A, and then later it's the other way around. Like, it's like the whole orchestra is divided over all the notes that are possible in the orchestra. Like one time it's divided in a chromatical way, which is very dense, like there's no room in between. And a few moments later it's less dense. That's dense. It's less dense because it's done with in a whole tone system. It's not chromatical, not with half tones, but with whole tones between every note. There's a gap of a half a tone. So the harmony that comes out of it is a bit, got more air. That's why I call it the breathing orchestra, because it's going from very dense harmonies to more airy. Also, there were some knit songs in between to represent more like the pop element and the knit element in the whole thing.
In June of 1992, Nitz and the Radio Symphonic Orchestra with conductor Jan Stuhlen play UV twice at the Amsterdam Concertgebouw. A different perspective for all the musicians concerned.
In the mirrors of this house, I've seen your face a thousand times or more. Times or more.
Well, that's a frightening experience.
A life-changing experience.
A life-changing experience. It was really... I enjoyed it tremendously, but it was quite difficult because, of course, I have no experience at all playing with a conductor. And that's a hard part. So I had to start counting all the time, which is something I really don't do. But in this case, I really had to watch the bars on the paper and watch the conductor, and which didn't always coincide with my playing. I remember very well that we were doing one of the intro songs, and I had to play a cymbal, a duet, you know,
the cymbals you smash together. And I really had to count and count, so I took them long before I took them up, and I was just waiting and waiting and waiting. And then, of course, I was too late, and I remember very well Paul and Tom sitting in the back of the room. They were just laughing. They were, ah! So that was difficult. But anyway, it was... The people from the percussion group were so supportive, and they help you with everything, and so they give you cues or they give good advice. So it was really, really nice to do. And of course, the sound when you're in the orchestra is just unbelievable. I mean, when they play all together, it's just an amazing experience.
Yeah, that's amazing, but it's so frightening. that I was every moment that I had to sing, I had to be so concentrated on the conductor, because I'm not reading music, so I have to be, I'm depending on what he's he's telling me. And sometimes he was quite late with it, like not looking at all. For me, it was sometimes really, really hard and exciting, but a good combination for your nerves.
And then the trio becomes a quintet. The core members employ the help of two extra musicians, Martin Bakker on bass, mandolin and vocals, and Peter Müris on percussion and violin.
I've seen your face a thousand times or more, times or more. In the darkness of your room, you've heard the wheels are turning, I'll be gone. I'll be gone. And cars and cars and cars and cars, cars and cars are going faster. Cars and cars, cars and cars, cars and cars are going faster.